fellow travelers, and welcome to the Way of the Showman, where we view the world through the lens of showmanship. I am Captain Frodo, and I will be your host and gracious guide along the way. We will soon enough pick back up again where we left off last episode, talking to the wonderful Gareth Bjorlund. This time we will delve deeply into his ingredients of comedy. But before that, I thought one thing that has pleased me immensely in this here time since we spoke is that the Object episodes, Jay Gilligan and Eric Aubrey's wonderful exploration of juggling and performance, and juggling and performance as an art, is back up and running in its third season, and it is wonderful to hear so many. When I have this active listening that I do, which I will have, we've actually recorded a podcast conversation with Jay about my process of how I take in information. But this listening to them, so many questions comes up in my mind about what we do, and I would I haven't told them yet, but I would very much like to get Eric Aubrey, who is doing a PhD in circus and. In Stockholm, Sweden, and I'd love to get him on here because there's been so many beautiful little overlaps. He is approaching a different aspect of where did it all come from, where did it all start, and he is specifically looking at juggling. But using my idea of active listening, if you go in there and you think about showmanship and you think about the things we talk about along here, then even though he is specifically talking about juggling, they are talking specifically about juggling. That is just one form. We can substitute that with any kind of material, and the explorations that they are doing over on Object episodes, a podcast can be found anywhere where you download your podcasts, probably on the same server or place you get this podcast. So I would absolutely recommend that. And the response to the t-shirt becoming available has been wonderful to see, and in a month's time I will be going to Adelaide. That is in middle of February 2023, for those who is listening to us in the future, which of course everybody is listening to us in the future because this is not going out live. So but anyway, I am very excited to be in a brand new production put together by Paul Dabek, old friend and wonderful magician, currently touring with The Illusionists in America. And we put together a kind of variety show, and I will be there, and I will bring some t-shirts and hoodies and stuff for people to get in person when we are there. And who knows, maybe I'll find some fine fellows and ladies to have a good conversation with there as well, and I can tell you all about it, and who knows, maybe I can even record some conversations for this here podcast. But with that said, yeah, you can find our t-shirts and merchandise on well, the easiest thing is probably just to go into the show notes of this thing and just click on it. But it's thewayoftheshowman.printdrop.com.au, and they'll send it to you. All right. So, without further ado, let's delve back into the meat and potatoes of the ingredients, the meat and potatoes as ingredients of comedy.
Should we delve into some of your?
I'd love to. So the first, and they're in no particular order really, but yeah, no particular order. The first one is big to small.
Big to small, yeah.
Which I'm sure you would relate to, like it's one that's super common in like street theatre and clowning and stuff where like, you know, you take a massive run up and do a tiny little jump, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
Or like, when you take a small instrument out of a giant case, or anything where the the audience is expecting something big and something small arrives.
Just exploring that now, like I have one of those, you know, the raccoons, the little animal that you can use. And I've just been changing it, changing the idea of it, what to do with it. And now my idea is to bring it out and say that it's very scary and have it in the cage. And then I take it out and continue to say that it's scary, but it actually is no point from when they see it where it ever was scary. So then you get this where they're arguing with it that it's cute, and then I come around to it being cute. So that's in a weird way also that thing. It's not size, but I say it's going to be like this, and then it turns out it's little and cute. And so that kind of gag, I haven't thought about that again, but it's true. Like, it's this discrepancy between it is produce the response. I think that's also really interesting. Like, I always like to think of when you're doing kids shows or whatever, the jokes don't always have to be like laugh out loud funny. It's like it becomes a structure of interaction as well, because with the kids it's like when you're a comedian, you count your laughs. It's like you do the laugh count of your show. How many laughs am I having if I'm a comedian? I do. But when you're doing, when you're a showman or like what we do, where it's a bit of everything, then it's almost like you count the interactions. How many times are they groaning, laughing, shouting, getting telling you you're stupid or whatever? All of that is valuable.
Absolutely. I always remember Emil, you know, Emil Wolk.
Yeah.
Yeah, we worked with him a bit, and he would always say, like, he was like, you don't have to, like, he was like, why do you keep going to the audience, like, constantly presenting to them and stuff, was one of the first things he said to me. He said, you know, things can just be nice to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's actually fine to have a section of your show which is just nice to watch, and then gives people a bit of breathing space. And so that, what you said, reminds me of that as well. Like, stuff can just be nice to watch, and especially in our area of, you know, showmanship, we're presenting odd things, and it can just be nice to watch a couple of people skipping along or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's so true. Like, you don't have to tell them how to act or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah. Already love this first one here, just to go, oh, wow, like, that is this thing of bringing the animal out and say it's really big and scary, and then you get it out and it's cute and little. That's that kind of gag.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. That's the one. So, and I love that we can, my next stage with this actually is to try and have an example. I don't have an example written down for each one. I don't have a pen in my hotel for some reason. Brilliant. We did some gags like that when we were streaming the school shows, actually. But so the second one is fish out of water. And that is just where something is in a place where it doesn't belong. That's why it's funny if you come out in your undies. Because, like, that doesn't belong there, and that's why I think it's funny.
It's doing an ordinary thing in an extraordinary spot, or a normal thing in an abnormal, at an odd time or whatever. Like, you're doing your street show and you start out and you take out your toothbrush or whatever, and then you start brushing your teeth for real.
Water
in it. The end, then you go, oh, okay, what am I going to do? You drink the water, and then you can start. And that's like, it doesn't belong at that time. And the kids will immediately get it. It's like going, oh, have to get ready.
Yeah, that's right. Anything like that, like if you see like an Eskimo in a desert.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's the wrong place for it.
It's there's just a funny juxtapositioning of two objects or whatever.
Yeah, there's probably other examples, but I think that's a pretty good
one. I get to think of, like, my dad, me and my dad, but my dad still does it, where he brings out and he goes, oh, and I have this machine that I've invented that can transfer thoughts, and then he takes out an egg beater. It's probably not his original idea or whatever. And then he gets the kid to hold it up and you're spinning this thing. And I mean, nowadays, those things are so rare and so odd that a lot of the time the kids don't necessarily know what it actually is. But it's still, it's like you get it out and you say it's one thing and you're going, and they, but they go, actually, this is, isn't this a kitchen thing? This, he didn't invent this. This is not a, they can at least see that this is probably not a thought transfer machine.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think that brings us nicely to the next one, which I think is the most, probably the most common one that's used in stand-up comedy and just across the board in jokes, which is the change of context or perspective that happens with a single word or an action. And like, I suppose like the classic theatre sports game, I think it's just called like props or something, where like they put like a, just let's use an egg beater because you said that, they put an egg beater in and everyone has to step in and use it for a different thing. So, you know, someone might use it for this, someone might use it for that. It might be a, like, yeah, it might be a helicopter and someone's trying to fly around with it, or it might end up being used to like shave someone's face. And that's just changing the context of what that actually is. That moment when people realize what you're doing, it's always, well, it's not always, it's sometimes funny.
yeah, but it's of course anything can be done badly, but it's just that recognition of, it's like going, oh, I see what you're doing here. It's like I thought it was something was happening, and then you use it in another context.
I like a verbal joke that's a classic that uses that is like that joke of like, my grandfather died peacefully in his sleep, which is more than I can say for the other six people in the car at the time.
Oh, yeah.
It's a classic. You think he's asleep, but then the next phrase changes the whole context of, and you find so many comedians, like someone like Jimmy Carr, like almost all his material is really that, or a lot of it is, not in, of so many comedians, this, all the jokes are this same thing. And we, it can bear a lot of repetition, like, because in some ways, all jokes, that one almost applies to all jokes in a weird way. Like, it's one of those big umbrella one.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I agree. Like, it's in a sense, it's that any kind of reversal in the end where the punchline somehow brings out, changes it or whatever. That's a... Yeah, I mean, even in these kind of riddles or whatever, like in Norwegian, there's all these jokes about the Swedish people. And they go like, why was this, probably, why does the Swedish person always bring a car door with them when they go out into the desert?
Mm.
And it's so that they can roll down the window if it gets...
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's the same thing too, but it's like you set up the situation and then when you then... You're putting the wrong context in. You're just having a person do something that's like, oh, no Swedish person goes into the desert without carrying some sandpaper.
Yeah.
So they can use it as a map.
Yeah. It's changing the context of how that's used. The sandpaper one, I think, works. As I said, some of them, they're not so... That a lot of them can be used to define different jokes.
Those may be good examples. I went straight to kind of edge cases. I thought, like, does this also belong in there? Where it's like these riddles, and then you get the last little bit that. But I guess that more sort of explains the situation more than so that they were probably both of those might be bad examples because I immediately went to.
Works better for, because a car door is always used to, it's a thing you always wind out. It's just that it doesn't work. But I think, and that's what I actually love about these, is it gets you thinking about why it is actually funny, and which is a cool thing. The next one, and this one's interesting. I think I've had a few people just disagree with me on this one, but it's just cute. I think sometimes just cute by itself is funny. Like, just, it just is. Like, sometimes if you just see a bunny with big ears, people laugh. It might be a huge laugh,
mm-hmm.
but it's a weird, it, maybe it's fish out of water as well, or maybe it's big to small. It can be both, but there's something about the fact that if you just do something cute, it actually does make people smile.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's funny, and it's certainly a gag in that way that we talked about with the big to small or whatever, where you pick the kid up and then the kid does something that's cute. And if you just go, oh, or whatever, then it's like, that's what I do to point out that we just had a moment of cute. And go, oh, yeah, look at that. It's and fun. Then that can also happen with when I produced a foam bird, which is really it's not very nice or whatever, but I produce it and I look at it and I go, oh, look how nice it is. And then they know what you're doing here. Like,
yeah, yeah.
But hey, I don't know if that's the same either. But yeah, definitely. I mean, if you produce a rabbit and take it out, like if it's a cute little rabbit, then you take it out, like people will laugh and be amazed all at the same time, like because it's funny. Like if it's a
and I thought like that maybe it's big to small, maybe it's fish out of water, but I don't think it is. I think it is, but it has its own merit because, like, we all laugh at cute babies just being cute. Like, something about that. There's probably more. You could go deeper into that one, but I think it's enough of a tool to go, maybe I should just do something cute here.
Yeah, and that's what I think is so beneficial with this list as well. It's not just that, I mean, this is a good joke, and because when people talk about jokes or like it's because it's gags, it's almost also kinds of responses that you want from people. And this is a certain, like if you produce a puppy versus an adult German Shepherd, that's two things. You don't laugh when the German Shepherd, if you have a box and it's empty and now there's a German Shepherd in it, you go, whoa, that's full on. But if in there is 11 guinea pigs with the Mexican hats on, then you're going like, oh, how can I resist this? It's so cute.
Yeah, it is. There's something about it that's just, that is funny. And this list isn't just jokes, really. It's not just jokes and not just gags. I think it's designed to apply to like just creating humor, so it can be via clown or via jokes or via, you could use it in art or music. You're frozen again.
Oh,
all right, you're back. Cool.
You never froze for me.
Hey, cool.
So yeah, but that's true. That's a good
for art as well.
Yeah, it can be for art or for anything, and that to me is, of course, that's when how I like to think. It's like whenever I'm talking or trying to jam with somebody on helping them create something, and I say an idea, then sometimes if they don't gel, you can always kind of go one level down. And this, what you're looking at now, is foundational kind of stuff. So like you go, you might not agree on the wording of this, or you might be, but then I kind of feel like, oh, we're getting hung up in the trees
Yeah.
But this is like going, these are approaches that you can use. So it has to do in that sense with communication. And the way that connects to art for me is that there is always a bit of communication with a painting that hangs on a wall is arguably just some blobs of colors until a human being turns around and looks at it and goes, now it becomes art. Because now there's a conversation between the painter's work on the canvas and the thing. Whilst when my dog looks at the art that I have specifically chosen and hung on my wall, it's just completely nonplussed. It's completely, it doesn't care.
It is cute.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny, so, the dog staring at the painting, especially a little puppy, you know. I think that's funny.
Yeah. Put a little bit of liver paste on the canvas and have it just check it all out everywhere. That's
I mean, that would be a pretty funny gag if you zoomed in on the dog and it's just like that, and then you zoom in and it's looking at some abstract art. Like,
That would be funny.
So then the number five is like slapstick, stroke, schadenfreude.
Yeah.
which is just, we just innately seem to find that type of thing funny, like people falling over, hurting themselves. If they deserve it, it can be even funnier, but that's not a rule. If they don't deserve it, it's still quite funny as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that has its own, that's the next one. Yeah, which
one? Yeah,
I think, examples of that.
Yeah, I mean, you can just kind of go, everything that Buster Keaton did is that kind of.
Yeah, well, a lot of his big stunts and stuff, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, not everything that he did, but yeah. A Chaplin and all that explored that. They also went into pathos and other things, but so much of it's where they came from, both being kind of vaudevillians or whatever.
Yeah.
That slapstick, it just is funny. That's like, I'd go, this is the core of physical comedy, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And Schadenfreude, as in the joy or humor that we get, for Freude means kind of joy or whatever. So it's like the joy that you get from the Schade, the injury of others. In Norwegian, we have an expression which I think also exists in German, but anyway, it's that Skadefried in Einas, the Sanne Glede. And that is that Schadenfreude, the joy of others' misfortune, is the only true pleasure.
Right. Interesting.
The only true joy that you can have is the Schadenfreude. It's the misfortune of others. And that's sort of that, have that as almost like, then that becomes really fundamental in jokes or whatever. It's like, you tell stories about yourself that was terrible at the time. It's like, oh, and then I was there, and then I had to pay excess on the baggage. And then when I finally had paid all of that, then I didn't even get on the plane because I got stopped. Like, these kinds of stories, when you tell them about yourself, or somebody tell the story of something that went terrible, can just be very funny because everything went wrong, but you're laughing, but they're actually, at the time, it was awful.
Yeah. Whatever. I thought Schadenfreude was when someone deserved it, like when you see like a baddie falling down the stairs. But it's different in...
Let me just quickly go. Schadenfreude, in English, the satisfaction or pleasure felt at someone else's misfortune.
Wow.
There is only one definition of it in the regular dictionary. It doesn't have like separate, and it comes from the German equivalent to Schaden, meaning harm, and Freude means joy. So it's just the harm, the joy of harm, and by the joy of harm in others is implied.
That's slapstick. That's the same thing, really, isn't it?
Yeah. It's slapstick. Yeah, that's right. It's when I fall off the stage and I'm already in a precarious situation. I got my racket wrapped around my leg and I fall off the stage. They go, oh my God. And there's a moment, and when they then see that this was, that I'm alive, okay, because it's already kind of funny. But it's like if your child falls over, if I fall over in real life and hurt my bum, then breaking your coccyx is, I have not done that, but to those people who have done it, it's just an unbelievably painful thing, and it remains painful for the longest time because you can't sit down and all this. Yet, if you have hemorrhoids or you have a broken bone in your butt, it's just funny.
Yeah.
So hard, like, to not laugh if you're like.
Yeah. Yeah, just having to admit you have a broken bottom.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. When your kid falls over, like, it's both funny, but you also want to be sympathetic to it, yet it is also funny. So we have this, and that's what the clown kind of do. If you put on the fake, the red nose, or you give the indication, like I do in my act, that it's okay that these things happen and you can laugh at them.
Yeah.
Allow them to go, which is what Buster Keaton does too. Like, he sets up by being this nice kind of character that, because sometimes if somebody gets a brick in their head, it's just upsetting. Yet when he gets a brick thrown and he picks it up and he throws back at the other guy and they both get bricks in their heads, it's, gets hilarious because of the context you got. It's okay to laugh at this.
Yeah, 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 it's definitely one as well that's, it's also probably the most subject to execution. They all are, but like, you, it's easy, as you know, to like, the timing of slapstick is so essential and fine and in getting it to really work.
Yeah.
Yeah, the surprise element of it is so important that it's easy to stuff it up. Ironically, it's easy to stuff up slapstick.
And it has to do, some of it has to do with what I kind of think of as authenticity. Did it really happen or did we pretend to do it?
Yeah.
And if you have a bad clown in a circus that comes in and you go, oh, now I'm going to sit on this chair, and then the other person pulls it away and everything is predictable and they fall off, then you go, oh, it's for children, because the children will laugh at what for adults is considered bad slapstick.
Yeah. Like, yeah, so yeah, sure.
You telegraph things more to the children to prepare them for it, and you can do the repeat or whatever. So in this show that I did, that I talked about with the theater and in the mixing the theater and the children's story and whatever that I did talked about just before, there is a slapstick act, the table knockabout, table sliding act, and that with the two young people who are doing it works exceptionally well for the younger kids.
Yeah.
And my act works exceptionally well with the adults. The adults like their act.
Yeah.
The adults. Yes. And the kids are okay with me and often come off afterwards, but they don't react in that way because my act wasn't constructed to get children screaming. It wasn't constructed to make adults laugh at physical comedy. And those, the modes that you do it is, and I think that we,
if
that's bad clowning, then you can think that it will be, it's not that bad clowning, that if you're a bad craftsman, then you're good for kids. Because that's also not right. But you can be more sloppy with your slapstick or more, it's not as real. But I think if you do real slapstick for adults, like, that's why Buster Keaton or whatever, it becomes a very good example of slapstick, I think. Because it looks so real and it takes the falls and it doesn't pull the punch.
Yeah.
And that thing where two clowns who sit on a chair can be really boring, or it can genuinely be the so that people come up out there, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. Like,
when real slapstick happens and people really get it, like they do with me, people come up and go, I have never laughed so much in my entire life as when this. So when slapstick becomes real, I sometimes think it's like a visual illusion, like an optical illusion, that even though you know it's not real, you can't avoid from it being funny. Just like, and you know that this optical illusion, you know it's not real, but your eyes, even though when you know these two squares are the same color, your eyes tell you that one is darker and one is lighter. You can't not see it, even though you know when you hold over one and hold over the other that it is exactly the same. Like, I think there's something in there.
Yeah.
Anyway, physical comedy. This slapstick and schadenfreude, and schadenfreude has in a sense that tells you it's that you laugh at others' misfortune, but the schadenfreude also tells you something like that you of that you give them the permission to laugh at your misfortune, that from the showman's side or whatever.
It's interesting. And like that, what you were saying about the authenticity, I'm going to skip over one now and go to the next one, and we'll come back to the other one, because the authenticity thing brings me to the next one, which is just truth is often funny. Just truth by itself. Like, if you come in sopping wet and say to someone it's raining, that could be funny. If they say, like, if they just look at you like, it's raining, like, maybe not the best combination, but so often if you just say what is true, it's like if a joke doesn't work and you say, I'll probably drop that one for tomorrow night or whatever, you're just stating the truth.
Mm-hmm. And
sometimes, so often, in fact, it is a caveat that makes and it works so well with the slapstick. It's why when somebody, it's why Australia's funniest home videos or Norway's funniest home videos is funny, because it's essentially slapstick, but people love that shit because they know that's actually happening.
Yeah, because it was real. That's right. It's like Miranda, my wife, she finds these kind of things funny, where lists of people who have had conversations and autocorrect wrote the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And when there's another sort of thing. If somebody just wrote, oh, I was writing my mother and then this happened. If you don't think that this was a real exchange, it takes a lot of it out of it, because then it's sort of crude, silly humor. But the fact that you have a screenshot of you having sent something and how it autocorrected something very inappropriate or whatever, then it becomes into this category of slapstick. Yeah. I intended one thing, something else happened, and it was wrong or inappropriate or like whatever. Yeah, that's but the truth thing there, that's I just did exactly that. I'm in the moment, I'm trying to be funny, and I'm looking for fun stuff to happen in my act, and I said something, and there was just no rapport. Nobody laughed. Nobody. It was just like, and this is like, I'm always looking for new kind of gags, and I found that one there, and you guys will be the only audience ever to experience it. It wasn't very funny, so treat yourself lucky. And then they laughed at that, because it's just exactly that thing. I've just said, instead of just moving on, which you could also have done, and it would have just been something I said relating to the situation. But since it wasn't, I kind of think of that sometimes as doubling down on something. If it really worked or it didn't work, you can double down on it and just sort of say more about that same thing, which it's also a common thing that stand-ups do, or whatever. You say it first and then you say the other thing, might say it in a slightly different way or whatever with the
tag. Yeah, it's a really fun one. And so often, it works really well in everyday situations. You know how people laugh in a way in everyday life at things which aren't funny at all? Like they'll say, I'm sorry I couldn't get the car door closed. Even things that are so banal, but we kind of cover up awkwardness with laughter or something. And I'm not sure how that relates, but it does. I think it's something about that we find that if something's true, it doesn't even have to be very funny at all, and we find it funny.
It's like, that's right. It's like, it's not funny unless it's true. That's something that it's
ironically a little bit untrue.
Exactly. Yeah, because it's not quite true. It's like it's like,
it's even better.
And it's it is a sort of guiding principle. It doesn't mean that it needs to be true. I saw somebody else talk about comedy, and they sort of said, it's like, well, when they say I go down the street to do this thing, it might only be 30% true and 70% tweaked into the thing. It was inspired by a true story, we had this conversation about jokes, and then it inspired me to make a movie about a gorilla.
Yeah.
So it's inspired by a true story. Yeah. Like, I don't know about like it, but it's something in there too.
Yeah. Maybe. Truth.
So another one, truth. And it's true. And that's also like, it's also not funny unless it hurts as well. That those are things that have been in my head at an earlier time in my life. So like that it's not funny unless it hurts or whatever. And then it's not funny unless it's true. But the truth can be true to a certain aspect of you or whatever. But you have to find some truth in the joke, or else it just becomes something that you said.
Yeah. And it's also got a little bit to do with what I was saying about, like, actually have fun. Sometimes saying the truth can be the funniest thing, because, like, to just openly admit, well, actually, I didn't really like it at all.
Yeah.
Which is the truth. And sometimes that can be very funny. You don't have to try very hard. That's what's beautiful about truth, is it lies within you, and it's about kind of about getting in touch with your own perspective on things, and people will just love whatever your real perspective is, because there's something very authentic about
that
in a way, you know.
It also takes away a layer of artificiality, and so that it brings forth the like truth in that sense that you, when I am trying to juggle and eat the apple, it's like you're doing all the shtick, and even though it is genuinely happening because you are actually juggling and you are actually trying to bite the apple or whatever,
yeah,
it still is. If you then drop something and then you go, oh, that wasn't so good, I built that up very big and then I couldn't do it,
yeah,
or whatever, then you reflect on what just happened there is somehow less authentic than this moment, and they feel like they get one tiny step or a large step, depending on, closer to you, to who you really are.
Yeah.
Like, because you're there, I'm now going to do this thing, and you're in the flow of it, and it abruptly stops. Yeah. And then just to say, oh, well, that was a bit disappointing.
Yeah.
Whatever, I really hoped I was going to get that. Wouldn't it be amazing if I did that then? Ah, then you would have got, this guy's so cool. Instead, you go, he's just a normal guy. He's just trying to get through the day. Yeah. Or you say something like that, and then they go, oh, like, this is the real person. It's just the person in front of you.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit. Even though the other thing wasn't experienced as artificial, because you said you're going to do it, and then you're doing it. So there's nothing artificial about that. But you feel like you go, oh, here's the real person.
Yeah. Or if you bit the apple and it was like rotten.
Yeah, yeah.
And you weren't expecting it. And then you were like, that is rotten.
Yeah, yeah. They get the fact that that is like going, okay, I don't know how to finish this now, because I don't want to take another bite. And they will egg you on or be sympathetic with you or whatever. Like, because that's true too. Sometimes the reason why we can't replicate the joke can be because it's like you said, oh, I couldn't close the car door. And then it's funny in that moment because of the truthiness of that experience. And then it turns out afterwards on revelation that the thing that made it particularly funny at the time, which means it's hard to recreate, was that it was just a comment on the truth of the situation. It wasn't such a good structure of a joke or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, you reminded me of something Fraser Hooper said to me once, which was one time, 1,000 times, which meant that sometimes you're practicing and something happened. Like if you do an acid gag accidentally and it's hilarious the first time, you have to practice it 1,000 times to get it as good as that first accidental.
Yes. Because then, I mean, but and that is kind of that's why theater sports, or why improvisation can be so unbelievably hysterically funny. It's like Miranda reading the autocorrect things or whatever, where she just laughs so that she's crying of these kinds of any kind of that kind of structure. She just finds it so funny. Yeah. And it's similar to that in that you, I lost my thread because I was thinking of Miranda and those things. But yeah, that 1,000 times, you need to recreate that thing. So now you need to practice it in, and it isn't real. So now you need to align all of your subtle cues that the audience always, like, they realize very easily that this was a real moment.
Yeah.
Whilst in my record routine, there are moments that they think just happened, and some of them are truthiness moments where I can comment on things. But when a certain situation arises, I always use that tactic. But the experience is not real, because I've learned how to create a truth moment within that.
But the truth doesn't.
That you said. Sorry.
I was saying, ironically, the truth doesn't actually have to be true for the gag to work. It just has to be a truth in the moment.
Yeah, and you can set up a moment and you know that this moment is going to happen, and then you comment on the truth of it having just happened, and that will still be funny. And that's why it belongs in this thing.
Yeah.
It's a structure of human communication, which brought up in a performance situation or even in everyday life, couldn't close the door there for a moment, whatever. Yeah. That's a funny structure, and we've just discovered that it can be funny, and that, but that's the Fraser Hooper, master teacher of clown and very funny guy, that one time and 1,000 times. It's like you've then practiced that 1,000 times, and now you can reproduce truth. Yeah. And when you reproduce the truth, it's funny, because that's why it's in this list.
Yeah.
Because it's,
yeah.
But
it is
only funny when it is experienced as truth, and maybe that is how that's related to cute. Because if I do in my I have done since the very, very early kid show I did back in Lionville Hall, when I did the thing for Karina Oates that had booking that, and I did show for a kindergarten, I took Otto up, and Otto was little, was Hamish's son.
Yeah.
And he was very young, and then I took him up, and then I was in that moment I realized, he's so little and it's so full on. So I sat down to make him balloon animal, but I just sat down on the edge of the stage, and then he came and sat down next to me, and I made the balloon animal there, and he just gave it to him, and I just recreated that moment. Now I have this animal that goes around and it's come alive again, and I saw a kid who might have only been 3. He was sitting on the stairs, and he was just in that age where you go, if I step over to him, he'll be a bit scared. But then I walked over with this animated animal, and I sat down, and I wasn't looking at him, but I was talking and looking at the animal and talking about the animal to him, and going, hey, isn't he so cute, isn't he so cute, in Norwegian to the little kid. And he let me first, he's like, he's leaning back, and then he changes when he realizes that we are both engaged in this moment, and he looks at the animal, and I go, would you like to scratch its chin? And the kid puts out his tiny kid, and he scratches the thing, and the audience adults are like going,
yeah,
I get the thing. And that was an example I didn't think of before, but that's cute. But I have done that moment before, and the first time was with Otto in that moment, and just make a balloon animal, but at the end of that thing, when I make it and I give it to him, it has this beautiful and you give it to him, and then he walks away, and I'm still sitting on the stairs just looking at him going like, wasn't that nice. All right, now for the next thing, and you've just created a cute moment. And so I'm using my knowledge of cute moments to recreate this moment in here, like you recognize it. So
yeah.
Cute and truth, different kinds of experiences that when you as a showman sort of points at it and going, this is just something that's true.
Yeah.
It's punchline. It's just saying something which is, that really happened. What I just did, that actually happened.
Yeah.
And then it's funny.
If you're doing a street show and there's like, just kind of be like a lady up in the window looking really grumpy and you just point to her. Like,
yeah.
That would be funny. Because it's true.
That's very good, and it's not funny unless it's true, but it doesn't have to actually be true. That's a good way to express that, and it's one of those things that doesn't mean anything, yet it expresses exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's a bit complex. The next one is taboo.
Taboo.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's so funny for all of us. And it's a little bit like fish out of water, but it has its own thing, because certain things, like doing the schools show, so much of the gags are based on taboo, like getting changed and scratching my bum, and even a really one that I wouldn't have ever thought was funny. And it's not really funny. They just find it gets such a big scream from especially young kids, is drinking milk from the bowl after I finish the cereal.
Oh, yeah.
The kids are just like, ah! Certain kids, because it's a taboo. You're not supposed to do that.
They've been told off a million times, and all of a sudden this adult in the guise of a child, which you've accepted that you're a child now, and you drink it, and you're doing this thing which they all want to do after you've had the honey smacks or whatever, that sweet milk at the end.
It's
just like, I don't want to eat it like this. Yeah. Or licking your plate when you're done, that stuff that you go, right. This is not done. Yeah.
And I mean, it doesn't get as much of a laugh as like a just a big reaction. But and I suppose heaps of jokes, like anything, any blue humor is essentially working with Taboo. Any jokes about sex or anything like that. It's a super common theme throughout humor, I think.
Absolutely. And it's like it also then, so it's anything eschatological about poo or wee, that's a taboo. Religion is a taboo, so a lot of comedians talk about religion because it's so like any kind of religion you bring up, and as soon as you sort of like bring that up, we're in tense territory. And it's also like it's then that's true, that takes it then into almost like stripping or whatever and burlesque or whatever, that it also becomes funny because you with playing with this, it's like if you start to take your pants off and you start to go then they will, everybody will laugh. It's all these kind of things, which ironically or maybe not ironically is that those are also, I don't know why I thought it up, but just those are the areas of that swearing comes from. We swear about shit, we swear about the course, and we swear about religion. Then it's like the intercourse, and then you bring in just like you combine those with your mother or whatever, something else, something that you care about, and then you go and then you hook something shit or sex onto that, and then it's like this is the domain of swearing as well, and you do that because they are, it's poking at stuff which is connected to, I don't know, like revulsion or something, when it's like the awful difference between intercourse and rape, or like, and or would shit, and it, like all these things, it's like you that's the stuff that really sets you off, and it makes you feel disgusted.
Yeah,
which is a particular response that we have.
Disgust, like farts are funny.
Yeah, but there's an element that core of farts being disgusting.
If you're
I was on the bus the other day to come home from this gig, and there was a super strong smell of fart for a while, and I knew it wasn't mine, and that is it's an uncomfortable situation. You're going, this smells like that because it's just basically air that's been inside probably that guy's bum, and it's just been rubbing up against his poop as it went out. And now I got those molecules in my nose. But it's not, it's like I'm talking, it's just the sense of tension. It's not that it's necessarily fully disgusting, but if you just fart, it's one thing, but if you fart in someone's face or whatever, then they go, ooh, or whatever. Like it's, I guess, so it's, but it's like, because taboo is, of course, like there's all sorts of kinds of taboos, and it's like religious taboos, or like a lot of them might be, or like how a tribal society might be going like, oh, well, for whatever reason this tribe didn't fish, it was considered taboo or whatever, or they didn't go up on that mountain because that was a taboo, so it's got some sacred connection to it, or it's got something terrible happened there, so we don't go over there anymore, or whatever. Like, and that takes it in why I like drinking the milk. It's just like, that's just a social taboo.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't,
that's right.
Because isn't that like Chinese people or whatever, like the way you're eating those watery kind of broth-based soups. It's like you're supposed to do the Japanese. It's like you're eating the noodles and then you're drinking the soup like that because you just eat it with the sticks. And this is how you do it. But in our culture, drinking the milk out of afterwards is not okay.
Mm.
Doesn't make any sense because you can drink out of a cup. There's a handle on the thing.
No, I mean, a lot of things don't make sense, I suppose. But it is a big one that works across all sorts of, you know, it's a pretty common gag, I think.
Because it's like, I was just wondering, because I'm thinking often that what I do with the comedy that I do, because it's often rooted in sideshow or whatever, that I am doing sort of entertainment or comedy by our knees. Like, I make people uneasy. I say, nah, I'm going to do a dislocation, and it might actually take 7 minutes before I do it. And is that, like, just this tension, because then I build tension, and then I say, when I finally am about to do it, I'm going, now I'm going to do it. I'm going to do the dislocation, I'm going to bend the shoulder. It goes like this. Then I turn around and knock the mic stand over, and that's one of the funniest moments in the show, because they're now so tense. They don't want to see this. They do want to see it, but they don't want to see it, so they're looking through their fingers, like, and then instead, the mic stand falls over. Oh, there was a mistake. And I turn around and I look at it. I'm like going, well, there it is. And then I throw some confetti on it. And it's like the punchline to the tension built up by something they didn't want to see.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's a that's maybe not a taboo. Maybe when the end of having had the spoon up my nose and I pull it out, the taboo is when I lick that spoon. And that's like you're not supposed to eat your spoon. So that's kind of like a... But maybe pain is, that's just some sort of schadenfreude, a slapstick kind of thing, maybe instead.
I think so, yeah. And it goes back to what I was saying about a lot of them overlap, I think.
Yeah.
And or maybe aren't necessarily ingredients that you want to use in a show. Like, or taboo can be used to get another reaction as well, obviously. It can be funny, or it can just be shocking, or it can just be completely inappropriate and not good in a show at all.
That's exactly right. And you don't really know which bit is. It's like if you're used to performing in a certain environment, like a nightclub environment, or sometimes you also get it with drag queens and drag kings too, who are performing within a very specific and often highly sexualized kind of environment as well, that when you take them in, sometimes, or certain performers, if they're not used to being in like a straight cabaret, and you go, oh, actually you have to tone your thing right down, because if you go too big too soon, then they don't know what to do with it or whatever. So it's like same kind of jokes, but you can do a lot more with a lot less when you change the context of it or whatever, of what's taboo in one place. I mean, you go into the straight, like real general public, and just the fact that they go, oh, I think this is actually a guy, that's already like on the edge of taboo right there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not completely in the field of taboo, like in the right context, and like where we, you know, in our community or whatever. If you just come out and you're dressed up as a woman, even when it's like done fully like a drag queen, it's you still go, yeah, but what? Like, we give you some applause because you look very good, but not now what we're gonna do.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that you're out there being a woman is already like
is
already such a taboo that you just say anything now, just pointing out the truth of, you guys are looking at me and I'm standing on a stage and I got these shoes on. That's very funny because, or whatever, like you don't have to be very funny or whatever. Because the taboo in itself has pushed it so far that just doing something very ordinary, like, because this is then in that thing of like, it's almost like fish out of water in this weird.
It's definitely related to fish out of water and truth and stuff like that. You know, like if you were doing a street show and a policeman was there and you sent the policeman, moved the policeman on.
Yeah.
That's kind of that's a bit of truth and a bit of taboo, because they know it's a real policeman and they know that it's a taboo to be rude to policemen. Yeah. So it would be funny, I think.
Yeah. I think you're totally right, yeah.
The next one you mentioned before as well is irony, sarcasm, satire, and I've got in brackets the doorbell gag, which is, I realise, is the same one. The doorbell gag is like a gag you often see in sitcoms and stuff where they're like, okay, everything's fine now as long as the doorbell doesn't ring. Ding dong.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty common gag. And I realized, I was like, which category is that one in? Oh, it's actually the same as irony, you know, like it's the opposite outcome type of thing, or sarcasm, where you're saying one thing and meaning another, or satire, where you're you know, you're sending something up. I'm not sure if satire does belong in that one after all, actually. Now I think of it.
Maybe not satire, but yeah, sarcasm and irony and...
But sarcasm and satire are connected.
In which way are they connected?
Sarcastically, you may be satire, making a satire of it. So I think that's why I wrote that.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, they're like possibly opposite outcome is another way of defining those ones, where you, which is a little bit like big to small as well, but it's where you set up one thing and the opposite happens, or irony, like, you know, like what we were saying about truth, like truth is funny and it doesn't even have to be true. That's ironic because it's the opposite.
It's like with a doorbell or whatever, it's the two people who are just going, oh, it would be awkward if somebody came in just now because you've gotten yourself into a funny situation or whatever.
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I hope nobody sees this, and then both just turns and looks at the audience, and then it's they.
That's a great one, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. You're doing the play or you're doing the gag, and then they're talking amongst themselves, and all of a sudden you go, oh, well, there's the audience, and then, yeah. And just sarcasm too. It's that goes almost in like it can be a form of truth as well. Like if you're sarcastic after you did it, well, that was a very good joke, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Then they laughed. If it failed, then just said.
Yeah. So that's a pretty big one. The other one is anything that gives you a very strong visual picture. I find this one hard to define, but it came from my brother-in-law telling me a joke, and he was like, why is this one funny? And this was the only reason I could think. And I'll tell you the joke. It's not he defined it as a joke that some people like and other people don't find it funny at all. But the joke is, why is poo tapered at either end? And the answer is so your bumhole doesn't snap shut. And I was like, and he was like, why is that? Which category is that? And I think that it's just because it gives you a funny visual picture. Like, I can't think of any other reason. And some gags do work like this. They like, it just creates an amusing picture in your head.
There's a
gag, one that I haven't got written down here, but I've been thinking about, which is like, I call it tip of the iceberg, which is where you tell someone something and that in that one moment they realize a whole backstory.
Okay, yeah.
And I can't think of one. That's why I need strong examples for all these. But I think that's the same one, essentially. Strong visual picture, like, tells you a whole backstory in one. It's a gag that a joke you'll often do to people where in everyday life when you're making a joke, where you'll say something, you'll insinuate something without saying it.
Yeah.
And that lets people know the whole story.
I do that in one of my, or maybe I do that. I go, I'm putting the spoon up my nose. I'm talking about the difference between circus and freak show. A circus and sideshow, and I have had a rock come out of my shoe, and it's all extremely weird. And I go, and maybe at this point, and you think that the difference between these two things is just a feeling, because I make that point. And maybe you're a bit disappointed. And if you're disappointed, that's okay, because that's exactly how I felt the first time when I saw all of this in the mirror. And that is very funny to them. And then I elaborate on what it was like. There I was, 12 years old, completely naked, just a spoon in my face, just to make the situation even weirder.
Yeah.
But then in that moment, they go, oh, all of this stuff that is so weird, and I get a rock in my shoe, a spoon in there, and I'm stomping around, and I'm walking like a Neanderthal with the biggest weird face, and it's... and at that moment I go, I rehearsed all of this, and I get that moment of me doing this, looking at myself in the mirror.
Yeah.
And all of this stuff that we just did, it just is a funny picture.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it's connected to change of context as well. But it's its own category because, like, a joke that I can think that I just thought of, it's a good idea to think of, I just thought it's a good idea to try and think of your own jokes as examples for this subject. I do a joke when I'm performing with my brother where we're telling a story of why a song is called a certain, of how we got the song, of how the song came about. And it's a story about us busking in Casino and a guy comes up to us and goes, "Oh, where are you fellas from?" And we say, "Oh, Barkersvale." And he says, "Oh, people still live out there, do they?" And it always gets a great laugh because it instantly makes you realize that, one, what Barkersvale's like, and that guy thinks that it's that there's no way that people could still live out in this shitty backwards place. And I think it gives like a strong visual picture of what that guy's like and a whole backstory in one little phrase.
Yeah.
And it's not changing context in a
way. Because that's right. It's really interesting because it's that thing when this one thing gets said, it is a seed, it's the tip of the iceberg. It's this thing that makes you reflect on what you have just seen in another way. Which it's just that same thing. It's like on this place, you don't know anything about it. Oh, people still live out there, but people still, what was it?
People still live there, do they? Yeah.
Yeah. And it changed, like it gives you this little thing, but it's like going, what, like, has there been a catastrophe there? Or is it like, what do you mean people still live out there? Like, or is it just so, there's so many, you don't know exactly what it is, but it's very little and it seemed to point to something big. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool one.
All right. Another hour into this conversation and we're only halfway through the list or so. So we will get the last final installment of this conversation next episode. So until next time, if you would like to support this podcast, get a t-shirt, wear it out proud around town. You could tell someone about it. Share a link to it. Put it up on your social media. It would really, really help me. I would love to get some more listeners and more people engaged in the conversation. So, yeah. Anyway, you can also buy me a coffee at captainfrodo.com/buymeacoffee.com. And if you have any comments, any ideas, any suggestions, then I'd love to hear them. So drop me an email on thewayoftheshowman@gmail.com, or you can find me as Captain Frodo or Frodo Santini on social media. So until next time, take care of yourself and those you love, and I hope to see you along the way.